final hour on this Bud Light Football Friday on Denver Sports Nation, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. It's a Bud Light Football Friday, of course, the official beer sponsor of the NFL. Here we go with our third and final hour. Yes, we'll get to the phones. Hang on. We'll get to more of your texts on the Total Beverage text line at 295-883-228-1043. Dr. Rick Perea, our guest in studio. And you were making the point before the break at the top of the hour about Peyton Manning that sounded reminiscent to what Terrell Davis was saying in the first hour of our show today when I asked him about being down there as a player on the sideline with Elway and the brand of leadership that Elway projected and exercised and Peyton Manning. And he said, listen, John was a great leader, but Peyton's more vocal, and he didn't get into the nonverbal stuff as deeply as you just did. But it's a remarkable leadership model that he's setting forth. And I know you want to talk about that here a little bit some more, but if you're to draw a comparison between Manning and any other contemporary athlete, great player from the past, you were throwing around some names during the break, Magic, Michael, Kobe, all NBA players. This is a non-traditional football brand of leadership, isn't it, coming from Peyton Manning?
Yes.
Even among quarterbacks, great quarterbacks of the game, great leaders.
He is demonstrating a level of acumen in leadership that I've never seen in any sport. I was trying to think of a player that has the impact.
Those are three guys who are close, but even in those three cases, it's not quite the same in your view.
No. Well, let's even make a more germane comparison. Let's look at Montana, Marino, Elway.
Yeah.
They each got it done in their own way, and mostly performance-based. You know, they performed very well, and they, you know, people followed them. But Peyton Manning builds a team belief system by just watching him, his nonverbals, how, you know, particular he is and pays attention to detail. The way he runs out on the field, his enthusiasm. Let me explain to the listeners how that works. I've heard a lot of people say, you know, I heard Boomer Esiason say he has a profound effect on his players around him, the young players. This is how it works, okay? A lot of people talk about, but this is the way it works in human behavior and psychology. So teams have a belief system. You know, the layperson calls it confidence. In psychology, we call it self-efficacy. Efficacy, and it means you have a strong belief system that you can accomplish something in the face of adversity, okay? So Peyton Manning demonstrates nonverbal leadership, verbal leadership, and he backs it up through performance. That builds his own efficacy. Players see that on the team, and that begins to build their belief system. My gosh, this guy can get it done in any situation, in any context. Then it starts to build a team efficacy. So he has that effect on other people believing in themselves.
And even also, on the defense?
Even on the defense, because when you're out there on defense, you don't want to let him down or the offense down. If they're marching up and down the field and on the defense, you're over there saying...
You're thinking maybe in the first half defensively last night, we're letting him down.
Yes.
Maybe he isn't playing great himself, but we're letting him down in the first half. Second half, it seemed magical. As great as the offense was, the defense was pretty darn good, too.
Right. And players won't tell the media this on camera, but... Yes, you think you're letting the other side down, and you have to hold up your end of the deal. Okay, they always say, oh, we're a team, but you still got to hold up your end of the deal. So from that team efficacy builds role acceptance. So in other words, like you got three main receivers on this team, star level receivers. Okay.
Right.
Now on some teams that would not work because that's just, you know, there's only one ball, only certain amount of passes I'm going to get. But on this team, people are willing to buy into their role, adhere to their role, accept it, and comply by it because they see his efficacy, his belief system, okay? So when you accept your role, then that builds into team cohesion. And once you have team cohesion, then people play for each other, with each other, and they will sacrifice.
And spreading the touchdown passes around last night as a result of that.
And they will sacrifice the statistics for the good of the group.
Right.
And then once you have team cohesion, that leads to team chemistry. And once you have team chemistry, those are what the great teams are made of.
We'll get back to the phones. But one thing that fascinated me about Manning last night, first play of the game, he throws to Julius Thomas. And Thomas makes the catch. And just as he's catching the ball, he gets hit very hard, drops the ball. We've both known a few quarterbacks in our time, some terrific ones, who would say at that point, you know, He's a kid. He's starting his first game. He's promising and all that. I can't throw him the ball anymore tonight. I give up on him right then and there. First play of the game, drops the ball. We all know what kind of game Julius Thomas had by the end of the evening.
Right.
That Manning didn't do anything of the kind, kept going back to him, throws him a couple of touchdown passes later on. Julius Thomas doesn't have a good game. He has a great game.
Right. And think about this. That's charismatic leadership. He was able to reflect back and say, okay, this kid dropped the ball, but I know what talent he has. I know what ability he has. I'm going to keep building his belief system. I'm going to keep throwing it to him, help build that. Because he knows what he can help the team do. The other quarterbacks we mentioned, I know for a fact, and I won't mention them by name, there are some Hall of Fame quarterbacks that literally have told their receivers, you drop another ball and I'm not going to throw it to you.
Absolutely.
Happens. But I'll tell you what, Peyton Manning is a master at building people's belief system around him. And again, it comes from that self-efficacy, role acceptance, team cohesion, and team unity that he's able to build that. And I think it's unprecedented to see someone like him. I mean, from a personality standpoint, Sandy, he really would grade high on a personality assessment in terms of his own belief system. He believes in building other people, and he's got a really strong sense of self. And when you have that at a quarterback position like him and the physiological capabilities and competencies, you have an outstanding, if not probably the most impactful quarterback in the history of the NFL.
I just love Terrell Davis this morning. We were talking about the leadership dynamic on the 97-98 teams by comparison with what there is today, and he starts laughing. I'm not even done asking him the question, the point of comparison. He's like, they got number 18 today.
Yeah.
We had a lot of leadership on different levels in the 97-98 teams. We had a great quarterback, was a wonderful leader. But pretty much starts and ends in number 18. He gives you all you need in the way of leadership. All right, let's get back to the phones, and we'll get to as many of you as we can. You're lined up for Dr. Rick Perea. Mike, you're on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan with Sandy Clef and Dr. Rick Perea. Good morning.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
I had a defensive comment, but I want
sure.
to comment one thing earlier that the doctor said that I always wanted to talk about was – how defenses have not geared to Peyton Manning. I'll tell you who did last year was of the Falcons. Man, that game when he threw three interceptions, that backfield of the defense of the Falcons, not one guy was sitting still. They were all over. You saw it from an end zone perspective. Those guys looked like a maze, and it confused Peyton to me big time. But I always wanted to hear somebody comment about that. But that was my comment.
Well, you're right. Three interceptions all in the first quarter on successive possessions. Bing, bing, bing. Interception, interception, interception. Did the Falcons have something, or was that Manning maybe in his initial stages last year being tentative, uncertain, whatever? It's a terrific question by the caller.
Yeah, it is a great question. Thank you for that. You know, it's a combination, but it's partly the Atlanta Falcons. They stem. We call it stemming. Pre-snap, before you move, you line up in a certain defense. When the quarterback walks up to the line of scrimmage and calls a cadence, then you move into a different front. But defensive backs can also disguise coverages, okay? You can line up in a cover two shell, and then when they're going through their cadence, you move to a different coverage. You can invert and trade zone coverages. You can disguise coverages. You look like you're in a man coverage, but you're actually in a zone. So the caller is very astute to point that out. And I think, again, defensive coordinators need to match the creativity of these offensive coordinators by stemming and disguising coverages to really try to throw a wrench in what he's doing, because obviously what they tried to do last night was not working. So I think it's imperative for our defensive coordinators to become more creative in the way that they attack, not just Peyton Manning, but any of these spread offenses. I'm an old school guy where it's 3 yards in a cloud of dust, so I'm a little bit of a dinosaur. But I'll tell you what, I've done a lot of research in the spread offense, and there are ways to defend it, and the caller's right. And I think part of it is, not all of it, is through stemming and coverage disguising to make sure that the quarterback is thinking about other things than their pass progression.
Hey, well, you wanted
guys,
to talk
those,
about
those,
yeah, go
those
ahead.
Those guys look like ants, the way I described it. I saw kind of a from an end zone perspective when Peyton was getting up to the line, and those guys were moving around like ants. I don't know how anybody could call a play accordingly to how the defense was set up. I've never seen a team do that, and I've never seen a team do it after Atlanta did that.
Hey, caller. Remember who the defensive coordinator was for Atlanta last year? And he is this year. Remember? He used to work here. A couple of different times here. Rick knows him. Rick's nodding. Rick remembers. He's the defensive coordinator here in 2009. Mike Nolan.
Oh, that's right. That's
Mike
right.
Nolan. Very interesting. Very
interesting.
He was a genius, yeah. But... yeah, well, he was on that night. He got the best of Peyton certainly early on in that game. You had a Wesley Woodyard comment real quick?
I did, and that was do you think our coordinator will change anything up? You know, when Woodard went down last night, it looked like the momentum change was just like you could cut it with a knife. Do you think that was just a happening then, or do you think
they were down to Lennon by that time? You know, because Woodyard is the middle linebacker now in the base defense, anyway.
Boy, they look like they changed big time when he was out of there.
He's a terrific player, and you talk about, you know, quantitative and qualitative aspects. Wesley Woodyard, speaking of brands of leadership, became the defensive signal caller last year, even though he was not technically a middle linebacker, right. Became the defensive signal caller after the New England game when Joe Mays got benched. Del Rio turned to him, and he said, night and day difference. Our defense came on last year under the leadership of Wesley Woodyard. Yes. Calling the defensive signals, which obviously as a middle linebacker he would continue to do now.
Yeah, and you know who I give credit for his development and success? Jack Del Rio. Let me tell you why. There are defensive coordinators in this league that would not play a Mike linebacker at 6 foot, 220 pounds.
Exactly.
Okay? They would not do it because it just doesn't fit the scheme. Okay, but you know Jack is able to think outside of the box. It depends what type of player he is. You know, there are players that are 220 that can still play in the middle, not necessarily pound away at guards, but you can strategically put them in situations in gap responsibilities or in pressure situations where they're using their athleticism and their ability to run. And that's what they do with Wesley. And the caller's very astute, again, in pointing that out because, yeah, when you lose him, you not only lose an effective player, but use an effective leader, vocal, verbal, and nonverbal.
That's the other thing that got people upset about Danny Trevathan, because that was the play on which, you know, Wesley Woodyard is trying to recover the ball in the end zone, and Brandon Stokley is making a move over there, too, and inadvertently undercuts him, and, of course, Woodyard gets hurt on the play. That was the other upsetting aspect of that Trevathan gaffe. Last night. It's 11:13. Sandy Clef, Dr. Rick Perea in studio for another quarter hour on your home for the best live and local coverage. The Broncos and the NFL. It's a Bud Light Football Friday on Denver Sports Station. Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. By popular request, I don't know, demand, I suppose, in some ways, Dr. Rick Perea will be with us through the end of the program today. Right up until the top of the hour, so another 40 minutes. Give us a chance to get to more calls at 303-228-1043, 29588, Total Beverage Text Line. We'll get to some of your texts here in just a second. Sandy Clef with you on a Bud Light Football Friday. You're home for the best live and local coverage of the Broncos and the NFL. Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3, The Fan, Dr. Rick Perea, our guest. Interesting, from the 503. Sandy, speaking of head cases, what's going on with Decker? Because the Broncos did so well, I haven't heard much about the two drops, including one in the end zone. They ended up scoring with a pass to the other side to Welker a play or two later. But Decker had a couple of drops last night.
I think that one of the things that happened is, if you remember when they first signed Welker, I brought this up, and I'm not trying to say I told you so, but, you know, it's going to take this team to gel with those three receivers. Now, they did well last night. But I think for all of those three receivers to really find their niche or their place in this offense, it's going to take a little time. Now, you know, Decker could have been distracted by a number of things. But I tell you, when you have three receivers of that caliber on one team, it's going to take a little bit of time and continuity to get used to each other.
Is it inevitable that one guy is going to suffer even as two might prosper? Inevitable, as much as they try to involve each of the three in their separate roles, and we talked about the leadership of Manning in that regard a little bit earlier, that one doesn't necessarily fall by the wayside, but one is diminished somehow. And
yes.
I'm not blaming anybody for that. I'm just saying it's inevitable that one of the three will be diminished over time.
Let me liken this to like a family system. If you ever have, if for those of you out there have two children, It tends to work pretty good, but when you add that third child in there, the dynamics change.
It's very similar.
You put that third one in there and there's not, you know, there's a third component. It's like a third wheel. It's going to take the Denver time. I do think they'll work it out. I think Decker's a quality receiver, an excellent receiver. He'll get it back on track. But it's going to take time for them to find cohesion. And that's what I meant back in March or April when they signed him. I said, you know, it's going to take a little time for them to really figure this thing out. How many catches? Who's going to get what? Who's going to be their, you know, their down the field guy? Who's going to be their possession guy? And that type of thing. So I think it's a work in progress. You know, I think let's not get too high that, you know, Manning's going to throw 7 touchdowns every game and everybody's going to catch 1 or 2 here and those 3 receivers. There are going to be games when they have a little bit of off, and that's just the normal ebb and flow of pro football.
On that subject from the 720, I hope we can temper our enthusiasm a tad because the Giants won't be trotting out Dallas Clark and Brandon Stokely. Both need to be sitting on the couch sipping with me. I think we should have paid more attention to the Baltimore media. They said the Ravens offense is going to be putrid. Beyond that, very happy with last night's game. Yes, Vegas right on the money again. But the points about, hey, let's not get carried away here.
Yeah, I love your callers. I mean, that's great. He hit it on the money. You know, they ought to be on the couch sipping with me. That's funny. Because
Dallas Clark's done. And Stokely, whom we all love around here, a lot of that deal had to do with Peyton Manning, let's be honest,
right.
From last year. And Joe Flacco, about whom we'll talk in a few minutes, ain't Peyton Manning.
Right. And and the caller is very right. I mean, yeah, the Giants going to present a different, you know, different scheme challenges. And also, you know, going away obviously will have an effect. Playing on the road will have an effect. Crowd noise, all those relevant cues versus irrelevant cues. So, yeah, you're right. Game by game, day by day, the Broncos are going to have to prove themselves. But at least seeing now what they've able to postulate and put forward, it's very exciting for Bronco fans.
All right, Maury really wants to talk to you. I think you know Maury.
Okay,
he knows you for sure. You're on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan with Sandy Clef and Dr. Rick Perea. Good morning, Maury.
Hey, their defense needs to play a little bit better to protect the quarterback because he cannot get hurt again. You know what I'm saying there?
With respect to Manning, right?
Right, he can't get hurt, because if he gets hurt, he's done.
Okay, but isn't that true with most any quarterback in the NFL?
Right,
it's play to play. Right, which is why one of our texters mentioned that maybe Knowshon Moreno, even though he got a holding penalty, should get a game ball for tackling Terrell Suggs, who had a beat on Manning at one point during the proceedings last night and was held back by Moreno. And the Broncos took a penalty, but Suggs, who had a little bit of byplay with Manning during the game last night that was not always pleasant, had a clear shot at him. And Moreno, who normally is terrific in pass protection, had to hold him, but that was better than letting him go.
I'll guarantee you that Fox, Elway, players on the team, everybody down the line will take a holding call versus somebody taking a free shot at your Hall of Fame quarterback. Guaranteed.
I believe, I don't have the name up here. Darf, is that right? You're on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
I guarantee he doesn't get in until his third try. Second of all, I think he got on and you were just talking.
All right. Didn't have a name, didn't have a point. All right, Joe, you're on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan with Sandy Clef and Dr. Rick Perea.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Yes.
Good morning.
Wanted to follow up a little bit on what you were talking about in terms of the level of Peyton's leadership on the field and what it would compare to and maybe other sports. I think Peyton's enough of a throwback that you got to go back to an earlier era. I mean, I grew up watching John Unitas lead the Baltimore Colts.
Boy, that's the comparison I've always made. You're right on that.
And from another sport, Bill Russell and the Celtics.
Yeah.
Kind of that combination, coach, father figure, somebody who instills fear and inspiration. I mean, and the interesting thing about Peyton, yeah, he's a throwback in that regard, but what we saw last night was cutting edge NFL offense. So, I'm really looking forward to this year.
Well, if I can comment on what you just said, I think you're right on the money. Let me tell you why. Peyton Manning is a different quarterback today than he was at the beginning of his career. And he has been able to evolve with the game. And like you said, what you saw last night is unprecedented. It's revolutionary. And he is able to really adapt to different offensive coordinators, different personnel, and be able to excel in that. And that's really that's a testament to his flexibility and his leadership. You know, we talk on some levels about leadership being reverent leadership, and that's the ability to sit back and reflect and take a back seat sometimes. He's one of those unique guys that can postulate overt leadership, you know, the things we see, verbal, vocal, you know, physical. But he's also one of those leaders that can kind of step back and understand when somebody else needs to take a leadership role, and he really allows that to happen. So that's really unique in not only in the general public, but as a pro quarterback as well.
Appreciate it. Good call. 303-228-1043, 295-88, Total Beverage Text Line. We'll get to more of your texts in our remaining 30 minutes with Dr. Rick Perea in the studio on a Bud Light Football Friday here on your home for the best live and local coverage of the Broncos and the NFL. Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio, 104.3 The Fan. Pup Talk continues at 11:34 on a Bud Light Football Friday here on The Fan. Sandy Klepp, Dr. Rick Perea in studio. We're talking during the break. I'm a big Terrell Suggs fan. I love him. I even like kind of the back and forth there that was going on for a little while last night between Suggs and Manning when Manning was complaining, I guess, once or twice about the late hits. And finally, Suggs turned around and basically told him to shut up and stop complaining. That was before the game got out of hand, of course, and Manning had more than the last word. But we were talking about leadership earlier, and I was watching before the game, Sal Palantonio of ESPN was doing a segment that was kind of interesting on the idea that Joe Flacco has now become indisputably the team leader of the Ravens. And we talk about Flacco here in just a second, what happened during the course of the game last night. But Palantonio, in making his point, was talking about a conversation he had had with Suggs. And Suggs made the observation that he had been in the league for a while and had one ring and one ring only, and Flacco got him that ring. So as far as Suggs is concerned, Flacco's a great leader and is his leader in his own mind. Suggs, hell of a leader. And you know about Suggs a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely, because my daughter went to Arizona State and played soccer at Arizona State, and we used to go back all the time, and we'd see him come back and really contribute to that, you know, organization, that team, and he still stays very involved with ASU football. But what I love about Suggs, he's a motor guy. I mean, that guy never gives up. He never quits.
He was imploring his teammates to stay in the game last night. I don't know if they were listening, but he sure was trying to keep them in the game.
Yeah.
He was never out of the game. He was the one guy who I looked at last night on the Baltimore side, and he was engaged the whole time.
Right, and he's an example of a defensive coordinator being creative. He's a tweener.
Yeah,
you know, he's not
exactly
big enough to be a stand-up,
right,
you know, five technique or a seven technique, but you play him at a five and a seven, standing up sometimes. And they'd make the best use out of him. But he's got a great motor, uses good technique. He's contagion as well. People watch him, and they try to emulate what he wants to do.
It was interesting, though, as Texter points out from the 408, that Julius Thomas did on one occasion flatten Suggs last night. That's good to see for Thomas, who's not known as a great blocker at this point in his career. But Suggs was a little distracted and maybe a little off balance on the play, but yes, Thomas knocked him down.
Very, very good observation, Sandy. He was off balance. He was looking to make an inside swim move when he caught him on that left outside shoulder and caught him right at the right time. I remember seeing that.
Yeah.
Reliving my days when that used to happen. You're off balance, somebody catches you and standing over you.
James wants to talk on the phones about a fellow we haven't really made mention of, at least over the last hour or so. James, go right ahead. You're on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan with Sandy Clef and Dr. Rick Perea.
Hi. Good morning, guys.
Hi.
What's up, James?
Well, I was just wondering, I mean, well, it kind of goes with every good quarterback. You know, it's always the defense second. And last night, our defense didn't do too bad. Yeah, in the first quarter, they were, you know, at average. But after, let's say, 5 minutes into the second quarter, they just started picking it up.
You're right. You're right.
Ray Rice was held to 36 yards all game.
Right.
After Michael Orr goes out, Sean Phillips steps up and gets 2.5 sacks. And then Flacco throws that. DRC once all game.
Yes, so yes, exactly right. I think you're right about that. It was just one time he was targeted. What a job he did on Torrey Smith. When Smith was doing any sort of damage last night, he was operating against other people. It was a great debut for Dominic Rogers-Cromartie last night for the Broncos.
Absolutely.
That it was. And Chris Harris, he's a nice young corner. That interception he made, that was a nice route. That was a nice. That was a nice catch.
Yeah. Get back to your point last year about Champ Bailey and about how he fits in, and obviously there's still place for him, but it was good to see that the Broncos could operate fairly effectively without him last night. They have a nice group of cover corners and some safeties who did some good work in coverage last night as well. But Dominic Rogers-Cromartie was arguably the best player in the field last night.
Yep. Okay, newsflash.
On defense.
Okay,
newsflash.
The Broncos are better at corner with not Champ, okay, with him not in there. Let me tell you why.
I'm glad you said that.
To play corner.
I don't have the guts to go quite that far yet.
Okay,
but
and I'm going
to
support it, though.
I'm moving in that direction. Yeah.
But let me tell you why. I always tell my students, you can make any assertion you want in my class, but just support it.
All right.
With ever either
all
empirical
right.
evidence.
Support your own assertion.
Let me support it, okay? For probably 10 to 11 years, Champ was the best there was. There's no doubt about it. But he is in the twilight of his career, and we need to be really honest about that. So we can't postulate the old Champ as what's going to be out there now. Yeah, the caller was very right. James said it well. The break that Carter made on that ball, Champ doesn't make that break.
Yeah.
You know, he just doesn't have that quick twitch muscle fiber. You know, you lose quick twitch muscle fibers when you get to be 34, 35, 36. You know, people don't, you know, he is a human being. You lose that burst. You lose that quick twitch muscle fiber reaction time. And so he isn't what he was physiologically. Now, that being said, he's better psychologically. So I think he's still valuable to this team.
He's
still valuable to this team, and he can still play a role on this team. But I'll tell you what, for my money, I want that quick young blood out there that we saw last night, not only just covering people, but attacking the ball. When the ball was in the air, it was their ball, not the offense's ball.
And here's the point about Del Rio. Chris Collinsworth made a great observation and told a story during the game. And it's interesting how in the production meetings, the coaches sometimes open up. And Collinsworth is talking to Del Rio about Dominic Rogers-Cromartie. And Del Rio is telling the story about how during the free agency period, they're talking to Dominic Rogers-Cromartie, and Del Rio says, listen, if you're going to come in here, you got to accept our coaching. He said, we can fix what went wrong last year, but you didn't have a good year last year. And to fix you, we need to coach you hard. Are you ready for that? And to his credit, without hesitation, Dominic Rogers-Cromartie answered absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes. And that and for Jack Del Rio to set that up right at the beginning, you can come here, but you're
going to coach you hard.
But you're going
to
be
otherwise,
coached.
You can get back to the point we were making earlier. I'm going to yell at you.
Yeah, you're going to be coached.
I'm going to get on you.
There's going to be structure. There's going to be discipline in this defense. And if you buy in, hey, grab a paddle and start paddling. But if you're not, you're not for us. And I think coaches that can take that kind of leadership role, we need more of those coaches, both at the high school, college, and professional level. And sometimes we don't have that, and you can see it in the defense. The reason this defense has been more effective, let's be honest, personnel-wise, they're not a great defense. But when you put them all together and you bring team cohesion, role acceptance, self-efficacy, team efficacy, you are talking about a team that's playing above their heads, and you can look square in the eye at Jack Del Rio, and he can take credit. It's also the position coaches. It's not just him. It's the linebacker coach, D-line coach, defensive back coach, all of those people working together.
This seems to be a tremendous coaching staff.
Yeah.
And John Fox deserves credit for that because he assembled it.
There you go.
And he assembled it at a time when he was losing his first year here as defensive coordinator, Dennis Allen, to the Raiders. And obviously, this year, having lost Mike McCoy, his offensive coordinator, the San Diego Chargers.
That's a great point, Sandy. John Fox orchestrated
the best thing about
staff.
John Fox as a coach.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
He orchestrated this staff and allowed them to coach their way. Sometimes head coaches want to oversee what a defensive coordinator does and kind of, you know, macro manages them. He has allowed these assistants to coach their way, and he's allowed Jack Del Rio to coach his defense, not only from a strategic and a schematic point of view, but a qualitative view in terms of how he connects with his players. And you saw last night, when Jack Del Rio got on Trevathan, okay, it's because he cares. not only about the team, but he cares about that kid. He knows he has better, he has more in him, more character in him than to do that. It's like a father with a son.
Great point.
I care about you, and that's why I'm getting on your butt.
11:43, Sandy Clough, Dr. Rick Perea, as you can tell, our in-studio guest at the top of the hour at noon on your home for the best live and local coverage of the Broncos and the NFL. It's a Bud Light Football Friday, Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. All right, we'll wrap things up on the phone. Sandy Clough with you on this Bud Light Football Friday in Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. You're home for the best live and local coverage of the Broncos and the NFL. We've been joined for the better part of almost an hour and a half now by Dr. Rick Perea. And we continue with Omar. You're on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan with Sandy Clough and Dr. Rick Perea. Good morning.
Hey, Sandy. Love the show.
Thank you.
It's always great when you have the doc on.
Yes. Thank you.
Because what I saw last night was a continuation of this team's identity from last year. They start off slow, and then the second half, they go, go, go. And I'm just curious what the doc thinks. You know, you guys have talked a lot about Peyton and the effect he has on his own team, but that identity seems to lead me to believe that they break the other team's will, you know, come the second half.
He just
lays it on them so thick, and they lose it.
Yeah, I think you're right, but to get back to your point there about the slow starts, again last night, Dr. Perea, a slow start. They've talked about changing their practice routine, getting to some of the team drills quicker, earlier in the practice, to try to fashion the idea that they need to start the games that way, so you practice and you play accordingly. Last night, there may have been other, the lightning delay, the conditions themselves, the weather conditions, but they started slowly.
Yeah, that's a great question, Omar. Let me answer it this way. I think the only score that matters is the score at the end of the game,
yeah.
And I think getting off to a fast start is often overrated. Let me tell you why. I think Vic Lombardi said it well this morning. He talked about the first quarter being data collection, the second quarter. I'll continue what he said. It is data collection, it's data analysis, and then data presentation. So when they break for halftime, they have a lot of information that they can go off. The adjustments that they're going to make based on what the defense is playing, how the defense is reacting to their coverages, what kind of fronts they're showing them, are they stemming, are they moving, are they disguising coverage, or are they just sitting in their base? What are they doing? What pressures are they bringing? Then they make their adjustments, and that's really when you see the difference in the second half. I remember when this team was coached by Mike Shanahan, they often would script their plays and they'd come out very fast. But the bottom line is if you're going to, you know, and oftentimes teams would catch up in the second half and beat those teams. The bottom line is the score at the end of the game. I wouldn't read too much negativity into not getting off to fast starts. I think there's a lot of information that's being processed. You know, when you get out there on offense, you've got to see how the defense is going to react. And then based on that information, you will make adjustments and adjustments in your scheme and how you attack that defense going into the second half.
Next to Kevin, you're on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan with Sandy Clough and Dr. Rick Perea.
Hey, Sandy, how you doing?
Doing well. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic after last night. So I wanted to talk about how the, I mean, let's be honest, they did start off to a slow start, but I don't think we're going to be able to expect to get 7 touchdowns out of Manning to see that on your basis.
You're right.
To the fact that, he kind of had a vendetta from last year, and also Suggs chirping him, and, you know, he's got to get out there and he's got to make a statement. I think that's what he did last night, was made a statement.
Yeah, and again, we talked about that earlier. I guess we've been talking about it in some form or fashion, Dr. Perea, for the past 8 months. And I thought there was an interesting distinction the other day. Arnie Stapleton was on with us from Associated Press, and he said, as I look at this team, and I'm around them every day, I think it's less a question of payback and more a question of getting the proverbial monkey off their collective back. Anything to that as far as Manning is concerned, the team in general is concerned, that payback revenge motive secondary to the idea of just trying to eliminate the noise and get the monkey off the back?
Yeah, I think it's more systematic than that. I think the personality that Peyton Manning is, it's not necessarily getting the monkey off his back or getting, you know, that proverbial monkey off your back. It's more about his intrinsic motivation to be the best he can be. When he can be the best he can be through performance, both physiologically and psychologically, that's what makes him a great player. So I don't think it's so much of the external communication that they were trying to get revenge on the Ravens. I think it was as simple as he wanted to get out, be the best he could be, help his team win. And whether that team on the other side is wearing purple or red, to be quite honest with you, Peyton wanted to beat anybody he plays.
Caller didn't get to this, but the notion of, and I don't think the Broncos really did run up the score last night, but the idea of 49-27, run up the score, there's, I guess, the thought in the minds of some people, well, you don't want to make them mad or embarrass them unnecessarily or gratuitously because they'll have another crack at you. You said earlier, may happen this year in the playoffs. Who knows? I take it from your reaction, nonverbal, that you're not a big believer in the risk attendant to, quote-unquote, running up the score
no.
on an opponent.
No, I didn't see that last night at all. I think, you know, Denver's points came systematically based on their ability to perform. And, you know, I'm from the old school. I used to be a defensive coordinator, not at the NFL level, but I used to be a defensive coordinator, and my belief has always been this. If you can score, score. You need to work on your offense for the next week and help your machine get better. Because if we're going to – I'm certainly not going to tell my guys not to pick up a fumble, not to intercept the ball. We're going after you to the last whistle. So, you know, I don't think Denver ran up to score at all. They just made some big plays. They had a block punt, which, you know, put up 7 points sequentially after that play. But I think that Denver just has a high-performing machine, and I think at one point in that game, Baltimore became so frustrated – schematically that they gave up physiologically as well too. So I think that had more to do with the score, with Denver scoring 49 points than running up the score.
All right, we'll close out with Chris. You're on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan with Sandy Clef and Dr. Rick Perea. Good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. Two just real quick points. I would really love to see for the next 20 or 25 years Jack Del Rio become the next Dick LeBeau, because I really think he enjoys just running that defense and scheming. And I don't know, because obviously I don't know the guy personally, but that would be, I think he'd be really, really great at just having that role for the rest of his career. And secondly, I think Trevathan needs to learn, or maybe he did a little bit last night, a little bit of humility and humbleness, especially from Wes Welker. Both of their gaffes, Wes Welker on the punt return and Trevathan's on the interception, led to Baltimore touchdowns. Welker looked like a little kid on Christmas morning without any presents under the tree.
He did.
He fumbled the punt.
He did.
Trevathan, on the other hand, is, well, we've been talking at length about this all morning. You know, he needs to learn from that. And what I thought was really cool, before Del Rio got his lashings on him, Kevin Vickerson in the end zone was ripping Trevathan a new one. Thanks, guys.
Good. And we didn't see that. You obviously did. And I say good on the Broncos, good on Kevin Vickerson, who's an underrated leader, I think, on this football team. Quick question. You talk about the defensive tackles a lot, and I know you wanted to get into that today, and we sort of ran out of time. How did they fare last night from the defensive tackle spot? Do they need to improve there? Vickerson and Knighton seem to play, for the most part, quite well last night.
Yeah, I think so. Knighton plays the one, what we call the one technique. It's the strong side shade of the center. And I was watching him specifically on plays, and I think that he moves well for how big he is. But there's more to playing one technique than just girth. If that was the case, you just find a guy that weighs 350 and stick him in there. You need a guy who can demand that double team, who's athletic, who can you know, use a rip technique to get penetration. And I think Williams is the guy. One area that I think with Jack Del Rio and his decision making is I didn't see Williams get the snaps that I would like to see him to develop. The only way he's going to develop is to get game time action. And I know, you know, this was an important game, but I think Williams really needs to be developed. And I think he is the answer, but he needs to get reps, and he needs to get reps his rookie year, because if you don't, he takes the chance of affecting his belief system, his self-efficacy, i.e. his confidence.
All right, a few quick texts, and we'll leave you for today at least. Broncos game plan from the 7-2-0 seems simple. Keep 18 upright and healthy. No drive-killing penalties or turnovers. Average 40-plus points per game. Sounds quite simple. From the 303, I've seen plenty of teams in it with New England and Brady, and many win going away again and again. Slow starts are just fine. It starts slowly, and the Patriots sometimes are part of that process, too. What you were talking about with gathering the data, analyzing it, and making the halftime adjustments.
And then presenting that data. And when you present data, that's when you put the ball in the end zone.
Well, it's been a pleasure.
Absolutely.
For the last hour and a half, we've enjoyed it. I know the callers, the texters, the listeners have, and it's great to see you. We'll have you back in a couple of weeks.
Thank you, Sandy. Great to be here. Have a great day, everybody.
All right. And we make way now for Drew and Scott over the next 3 hours, The Drive with Big Al and D-Mac. They'll be fired up from 3 to 6 on your home for the best live and local coverage of the Broncos and the NFL. Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio, 104.3 The Fan on a Bud Light Football Friday.